The New York Times reported earlier this week on a 2022 survey from the National Education Association. It found that 55% of educators surveyed say they were considering leaving the profession altogether. That's more than half. Why is it more than half? Is it the pandemic? Is it the politics, the parents, the pay? And what do teachers have to say about all this? I'm asking. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. If you are a teacher, what's it like in your classroom today? Or if you're a parent, what do you see from your teachers? If you are a student, you can join us too at 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can always email us as well, ideas@WPR.org. Our guest has spent a lot of time hearing from teachers about all of these things. Alexandra Robbins is an author of 5 New York Times best-selling books and a Goodreads nonfiction book of the year. Those books include The Overachievers, The Secret Lives of Driven Kids. Her new book came out just yesterday. It's The Teachers, A Year Inside America's Most Vulnerable, Important Profession. Alexandra, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's start with that National Education Association survey from last year. It found that 55% of educators were considering leaving their profession. What's your reaction to that?
That number might actually be low. Morale among teachers is extremely low right now. And it's not just because of the pandemic. The issues in the education system started before the pandemic. It's just the pandemic exacerbated them, and the treatment of teachers has gotten worse.
So it's not just the pandemic then. So what were these issues before the pandemic that teachers were seeing that were driving them to consider leaving the job?
Sure. Well, teachers are incredibly hardworking professionals who work an alarming number of hours unpaid, but instead of our gratitude and a proper salary, they're getting disparaged and demoralized. Right now, the teacher pay gap has hit a record high. U.S. teachers earn 24% less than professionals with similar education and experience. That's demoralizing. Then you have a job where district officials and sometimes principals pile on extra responsibilities onto teachers without giving them the resources, support staff, or planning time to do that within their paid contractual hours. So teachers are working late into the night, almost every night, trying to get their job done.
And yet at the same time, as you write in your new book, the teachers, they often have to take on secondary jobs just to pay the bills.
That's right. So I followed 3 teachers for a year to make it sort of an interesting behind-the-scenes story with characters whom readers would work for. One of those teachers, Penny, she was an 18-year teaching veteran, an award-winning teacher, and she was making $47,000 a year. And she couldn't live on that. She had 2 extra jobs.
And there are 2 others that we'll get to, but we should also mention, Alexandra, that you were a substitute teacher as well. How did that experience suit you?
So it's interesting. I see what teachers mean by they love teaching, but they do not love being a teacher. The act of teaching is beautiful, just connecting with students and colleagues and having this mutual learning and growing experience and impacting their lives and seeing them make connections. There's just joy and exhilaration in that. You know, I grew up playing sports and I've experienced runner's high during sports, but teacher's high is way better. However, I subbed almost the whole year. I subbed more than 150 days out of 180. And for the whole year, including almost a semester spent as a full-time third grade teacher, I made $17,000. So I understand what teachers are going through.
Wow. And you write about this in your book. And here's a quote I've got highlighted. Making joy happen is a driving force unlike any other I have ever experienced. So when we talk about why teachers stay, this has to be at least one of the big underlying reasons, Alexandra.
They stay for the students. Absolutely. They leave because the adults. It's true. They leave because of administrators. They leave because of district officials. They leave because of parents. Who? You want to talk about parents? That's a whole other show.
So introduce us to the 3 teachers that you shadowed for a whole school year. And I think you mentioned Penny, who was an 18-year teacher who was making less than $50,000 as a 6th grade math teacher.
Yes, she was a math teacher in the South. I followed Miguel, a Western special ed teacher who was fighting to save both his school and the special ed program that his school board was trying to destroy, and Rebecca, an East Coast elementary school teacher. Now, Rebecca, she hadn't had a date in 5 years because her work was all-consuming, and her boyfriend had even broken up with her because he said she was spending so much time at home working on teaching rather than paying attention to him. So I followed her the year she tried to get back into the dating pool to see if she could teach and have a work-life balance at the same time.
Yeah, and she couldn't.
I'm not going to spoil it for anyone. It's a story that we follow, and you know, the ups and the downs and the maybes.
And I got it. You start the book with the start of a new school year, and I got that feeling of the anxiety, but the excitement of the start of a new school year. And as you detail, it's not just the students that feel that way; it's the teachers as well. They get excited for this school year, and then you go through the school year in your book month by month, and it's just. It sounds like such a challenge to just get back to that making joy that is such a cause or reason for teachers to do what they do.
And you know what one of the hardest months of the year is? Right now, March. Some teachers call it Death March because it's like this long slog with no break or holidays.
Yeah, that sounds about right. How big of an issue do you see perception versus reality being here? The work of teachers and public opinion or even portrayal in the news media compared to what you saw and what you experienced in your work for this new book?
The public has no idea what teachers really go through. That was the point of the book. I want the public to be aware of educators' unacceptable working conditions. This wouldn't be tolerated in any other job. We dump so much stuff on teachers. But yet I also wanted the public to see the joys that teachers feel and just how much teachers go above and beyond for, they call them their kids. They don't call them their students. I interviewed hundreds of teachers across the country, and they all said, "My kids." And that's how they really feel.
Alexandra Robbins, our guest. She is the author of the new book, The Teachers, A Year Inside America's Most Vulnerable, Important Profession. Just this week, the New York Times listed it as one of 19 works of nonfiction to read this spring. And here's another quote from the book that stuck with me that you were speaking about, Alexandra. Teachers are the country's silent, constant superheroes, and that's a big problem. They shouldn't be our superheroes, you write. Why?
Because what has happened is that teachers have become, as I said, the dumping ground. It's like all of society's failures, all of the government's failures rest on teachers' shoulders. And I'll give you a sort of a somber example of that. The only thing that changed between the 2012 Sandy Hook massacre and the 2022 Robb Elementary School massacre was that teachers were trained to hide their students and barricade the door. Nothing else really changed substantively in society. So this is an example of teachers having to bear the weight and responsibility for society's failures. We saw in the pandemic that public schools were having to feed children because the government wasn't taking care of them. Again, we had to go to teachers and school staff to feed food insecure students. It's like everything comes down to teachers, and they're not being paid for it.
Going above and beyond on a regular basis. So you also talk about, and I think this is towards the end of your book, Alexander, about the catch-22 that the education system itself finds itself in with, you know, a void for teachers, the need for teachers, an education system that would need to change in order to get more teachers. So what comes first? How does the education system change to accommodate a teacher being able to afford to live and do what they love?
Yeah, the job has to change. First, higher pay for teachers. And I don't mean that glibly. Studies actually show that students' math and English scores are significantly higher in districts that have higher base salaries for teachers. We also need more support staff, more counselors, aides, paraeducators, and a full-time nurse in every school. And most of all, we need a job that can actually be managed during teachers' paid contracted hours at school rather than bleed late into the night unpaid.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with author of 5 best-selling New York Times books, Alexandra Robbins, about her new book, which came out yesterday. It's called The Teachers, A Year Inside America's Most Vulnerable, Important Profession. It follows 3 teachers throughout the school year, and we want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest, and what's resonating with you here? What strikes a chord? Whether you are a teacher, a student, a parent, administrator, the custodial staff, it all goes into making it happen every day in the classroom. How are the connections with the teachers and the parents? What do you see from where you sit today about education in America right now? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're picking up our talk with the author and reporter Alexandra Robbins. Her new book, The Teachers, A Year Inside America's Most Vulnerable, Important Profession. And we want to hear what you think about your teachers today, past, present, 1-800-642-1234. And if you're an educator in the classroom, share what you see. 1-800-642-1234. Have you considered looking for another job elsewhere? What is it that keeps you with these kids? You can also email us ideas@WPR.org or share your observations on our Facebook Ideas Network Facebook page. And what about the politics of teaching today, Alexandra? Where are the perils in that?
Well, we live in a very strange time. We live in a time where certain politicians are pushing to censor teaching and classroom discussions of race, racism, gender, and LGBTQ issues. They're galvanizing parents by packaging these measures as parents' rights. However, this does not include all parents. Their messages of exclusion and bigotry pander to only a certain small subset of parents. And what this has done in the education landscape is there's been sort of a targeting of teachers who are sort of caught in the middle of the things that they know actually happened in U.S. history, or the things they know they need to teach, or the things that students need to confide in trusted adults like teachers and guidance counselors, and the politicians who are saying, well, no, you can't. And I'll give you examples. A New Hampshire parent group offered a bounty for anyone who caught a teacher talking about racism or sexism in schools, I think $500. A Pennsylvania elected official, a state representative, told right-wing parents to become substitute teachers just so they can spy on other teachers. This is a pretty intense anti-teacher sentiment that not only makes this one of the most difficult times to be a teacher, but also is part of this large national movement attacking public schools.
Yeah, Christina on our Facebook page wrote a challenge they see teachers facing is censorship by the political right. But it's being the way it's we read about it is a parents' bill of rights. The parents have a set of rights when it comes to their child's education. How do you balance those in the classroom?
Well, you know, I think parents have the right. I'll give you an example. Let's talk about the books. Yeah. Parents have the right to monitor what their own child reads if that's how they want to parent. But they do not have the right to control what all children read. So parents, instead of just saying to their child, you know what, I don't want you to read a book about XYZ, they're saying ban the book entirely, take them out of the library. And worse, now they're talking about pressing charges against school librarians or teachers who have those books in their classrooms and make them accessible to students.
I'm glad you mentioned school librarians, because this is a part of your new book, The Teachers. Alexandra, talking about the role that school librarians play and specialist teachers play as well, and how those often seem to be the first things to be cut when it comes time for budgeting for education.
Librarians are extremely underestimated. Students are actually more likely to graduate, master academic standards, and score higher on tests if their school has a full-time qualified librarian. However, 40% of K-12 schools don't have a full-time librarian, and nearly a third of school districts in our country don't have any librarians at all. We need them. They're central to student success.
Mm. Alexandra Robbins, our guest, the author of the new book, The Teachers, A Year Inside America's Most Vulnerable, Important Profession. You're welcome to join the conversation. Tell us what you see from where you are today at 1-800-642-1234. And the book details the lives, 1 year in the life of three teachers. And one of those teachers is Miguel, who you mentioned before, a middle school special education teacher. But I also become invested in some of these students that these teachers have in their classroom every way. And one of those that stuck out to me was the relationship Miguel had with Eli in his classroom through the school year. Can you share a little of that with us, Alexandra?
Yeah, Eli had a bad reputation in school. Prior educators had said, well, he comes to school late or he doesn't come at all. And then every year, regularly, he would bolt from the classroom for no reason. And so Miguel started the year saying, he told me, he said, I'm going to treat Eli like the student I want him to be rather than the student that I heard that he was. And he did. He just exuded such a warmth when Eli came to the classroom. When Eli came in, 2 hours late, Miguel wouldn't say anything about being late. He'd say, hey, Eli, I'm so glad you're here. It turned out Eli was homeless. So Eli was dealing with so many more challenges than meets the eye. And Miguel's hard work with him was a really inspiring story to follow.
Yeah, these classrooms don't happen in a vacuum. And you detail this in no uncertain terms in your book, the teachers, that it's part of the context that are part of the lives of the teachers and the students. But that classroom is so, indelible. I can still remember all the names of my grade school teachers, and they've all become a part of who I am today. So they don't happen in a vacuum. But do we recognize that as the role that these schools play in the lives that these kids have?
People aren't thinking about that. They're not thinking about the teachers. And there are so many teachers who told me they do this when their kids are at recess. The teachers buy food. And when the kids are at recess, they stuff backpacks of food insecure children with the food so that they know that at least their family will have something to eat. Teachers are doing this, paying out of their own pocket. 94% of teachers pay for their own classroom supplies out of pocket, an average of $500 a year. Penny once spent $2,000 in a year. And part of that is looking out for kids who can't afford things.
Penny is one of the three teachers you detail in your new book, The Teachers, A Year Inside America's Most Vulnerable, Important Profession. I have to ask you, out of curiosity, after reading the book, did you find the three best teachers in America? Or are these just indicative of what you find in any classroom, in any school, everywhere?
Any classroom, any school, anywhere. I there are so many teachers I could have followed. I interviewed hundreds. So many would have had great stories. I chose Rebecca, Penny, and Miguel because I knew that readers would both relate to their stories and find them captivating.
Let's go to your questions and comments now at 1-800-642-1234 with our guest, Alexandra Robbins. Camille in New Berlin, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me correctly?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yes, putting more money into the schools. First of all, I was a teacher for over 30 years. I served 5 years on our local school board. If putting more money into the school means that superintendents can create new positions like assistant superintendents, more directors of curriculum, these are two-year contracts. The people earn 2 to 3 times what a teacher does, the average teacher does. And then you can't even get rid of them because if there's budget crunches, because they're on 2-year contracts. So unless we get a grasp on where the money is being spent and put it back into people who directly impact the lives of kids, we're not going to see much of a change.
Camille, thank you for your call and your observation. Alexandra, what do you see there?
Oh, I agree with that 100%. It's called central office bloat. People say, oh, well, we don't have any more money for the schools. Yes, we do. It's just that superintendents and district officials are putting the money into more district official positions, extra chiefs of staff, extra, assistant director of something or other. And Camille's exactly right. And they don't have anything to do with the students. They don't have anything to do directly in schools. And they make 6-figure salaries. It's ridiculous. Yeah, we have the money. It just shouldn't be going to the central office. It should be going to the teachers.
And as you detail in the teachers, it's when Miguel gets an aide in his classroom that seems to turn the entire school year around, even the students.
Yeah, Miguel was getting assaulted in his classroom on a daily basis. He was bitten, he was punched, he was hit. This was the year before I followed him. That happened. And he kept complaining to the district saying, you keep sending me these moderately to severely disabled students, but you're not sending me any assistance. And I can't do this all by myself. And they kept saying, no, you're fine. No, you're fine. Then the district official in charge of assistance came to the school and he showed her the bite marks up and down his arm. And she shrugged and she said, well, that's just part of the job. Well, no, it's not. Yeah. It should not be part of the job.
Where else would that be part of the job except for maybe
exactly.
Mixed martial arts? I don't know outside of that, but there's no biting in mixed martial arts.
I hope not.
So one of the things you challenge in your book, Alexandra, is teacher burnout. And you provide a bigger perspective and say in some context, teacher burnout's a myth. Explain that.
Teacher burnout is a myth because, okay, so the phrase teacher burnout is a way of talking about exhaustion from overwork. It's misleading because experts say that the burnout for teachers is caused by inadequate workplace support and resources, high stakes testing, stuff like that. But instead of fixing these issues like any normal workplace would do, districts often say, well, the teacher should just do a better job of, and I'm air quoting here, self-care, as if it's on them to relieve the stress caused by a job that's impossible to do. So I say teacher burnout is a myth. The feelings that teachers have are extremely valid and they're going through this. However, it's not their fault. Instead of saying things like, oh, well, teachers have the highest burnout levels, we should be saying, no, school systems are the employer's worst at providing employees with necessary supports and resources.
Alexandra, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for your new book.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Alexandra Robbins is an author of 5 New York Times bestselling books and a Goodreads nonfiction book of the year. We were talking to her today about her book just out yesterday. It's called The Teachers, A Year Inside America's Most Vulnerable, Important Profession, as it continues to move forward.